Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Iti viso bhagavā arahaṁ samma sambuddhassa. Charana sampanno sukato lokavido antaro purusa dhamma sarati satta deva manusanam buddho bhagava ti svakato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko akariko ehi pasiko opanayiko pachattam veditampo vinyi tiya supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho ujupatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho nyayapatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho samichipatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho yatitam chattari purisa yugani attha purisa pugala esi bhagavato savaka sangho ahuneyo pahuneyo dakshineyo anjali karaneyo anuttaram punyakhetam lokasati evam buddham samantanam dhammam sangham cha bhikkhavo bhayam va champitattam va lomahasu va nahi sati eti.
So this is the third time I come to this place to conduct a 1 month retreat, and this time I have chosen the topic which is of particular interest, especially to me, as I am trying in my country and in Central Europe where I come from to find some kind of a common ground for all the practicing Buddhists. And precisely the practice of the paramis that we are going to cover during this month is this common practice of all the traditions, which is very necessary for all those who are interested to benefit from the Buddha's teachings. So, we will start in a bit unusual way because some of us have a long experience in meditation, some of us don't have experience in meditation. So we will start from the meditation parami or samadhi parami, or in the Theravada tradition there is, among the 10 paramis, there is no really samadhi parami. There is a nekhama parami or metta parami, which are corresponding to the samadhi parami. But what I will start explaining from tomorrow morning is the practice of meditation, especially of samatha meditation, the samadhi, the science of samadhi. I will base myself mostly on the on one hand on the Theravada tradition, on the other hand I will use especially the Yogacara Bhumi Shastra, which I have studied in some detail, and I will use also some of the Nagarjuna's commentary to the Pragyaparamitas. Then I will use some materials here and there to explain the practice of samadhi. And the general topic in the practice of samadhi, which most of the practitioners of samadhi do practice and which is the most common in our tradition, is anapanasati. So I will first explain these principles of samadhi, basing myself on the anapanasati practice. Now, we will emphasize, as we have done in the last two retreats, the practice of the jhanas, of the absorptions, which are, so to say, the base for, on one hand, for the vipassana practice or for the deep vipassana practice. Deep vipassana practice should base itself on the experience of the dhyanas. And on the other hand, in the Mahayana tradition also, these innumerable samadhis, which the Mahayana tradition is talking about, are based also on the mastery of the traditional dhyanas. Without them, this practice is very difficult, or say, impossible. So, we will start by explaining the practice of the Anapanasati and the practice of Samadhi in general, especially emphasizing the practice of Samadhi as Parami. How, step by step, to master the deep concentration. After that, then we will start discussing the other parami, starting with the first parami in all traditions, the dana parami, or the giving. And so on, we will explain the 6 or 10 paramis as presented in different traditions. Mostly basing ourselves, so we will hear some nice stories on the Jatakas also, which is a main base, so to say, for the practice of the paramis. Also in all traditions, the Jatakas explain how the Buddha himself has practiced the paramis in the past lives. So we will hear some nice stories, and through these nice stories we will also try to illustrate how the paramis work. So come back, according to the Yogacara Bhumi Shastra, for example, the Bodhisattva Maitreya says that by practicing the paramis we can attain all kinds of excellences. Among these excellences, the 4 excellences are especially important and discussed. We will also discuss them in some detail. The first excellency which can be attained by practicing the paramis is the very important excellency in the controlling faculties, the indriyas. The more paramis we have, the more prominent will become the controlling faculties, which are responsible, so to say, for the better quality of life, if we have any. Which are the controlling faculties? The faith. Faith, as we students of Buddhism should know, is has a bit different connotation in Buddhism than it has in the Western culture. The faith is explained as okapana, or avakalpana, arranging oneself with the object. with the objects of wisdom, with the objects of meditation. This is the real meaning of faith. So it means it is kind of also a dynamic aspect of wisdom. It is closely connected to wisdom. Without wisdom, no faith. Without faith, no wisdom. So by practicing the paramis, this faculty of faith in the sense of arranging oneself with the objects of meditation, with the objects of wisdom, will become very prominent. Therefore, the quality of our lives will change radically. Then, the next controlling faculty connected to faith, without faith, no question of samadhi. By practicing the paramis, the faculty of controlling faculty of samadhi should become very prominent. And samadhi also basically means nothing else than the correct one-pointed application of mind to the objects. Nothing else. It is a very practical ability without which the quality of our life will be, if we have it, will be of higher quality, will be of bringing us nearer to the aim of happy and fulfilled life. So this is a second controlling faculty which should be increased by the practice of the paramis, and we will try to do our best to explain how to do it, and we will try our best, which is most important, to practice it, not just to understand it. In order to practice well, we have to understand well what we are doing. So we will try our best to connect the theory with the practice so that you are very clear what you do, how you do it, and what you are supposed to attain step by step by doing it. So this will be our main task during this retreat. So then the faculty of wisdom. Faculty of wisdom in the Buddhist tradition is directly dependent on the faculty of samadhi, on our ability to put our mind on the objects of cognition in a correct way, in a way where mind is gathered, or is where the leading force of the mind is one-pointedness. Leading power of the mind, when the most prominent power of the mind becomes one-pointedness, one can gather the mind on the objects of cognition correctly. If one then gathers the mind on the objects of cognition correctly, one will be able to attain wisdom. Wisdom means nothing else but seeing things as they really are, and the skillful means of doing that, in the sense of paramis, also the skillful means of guiding others to seeing things as they really are. Then the controlling faculty of effort. Without effort, no parami, no virtue leading to transcendental knowledge is possible. So, since we have decided to come here 1 month to spend our time in meditation in improving the quality of our life, because it is by meditation that we improve the quality of our lives best. If we want to do it, we are dependent on this virtue of effort. No one has attained anything anywhere without effort. So the practice of the virtues is dependent directly. All virtues, without exception, are dependent on effort. And then the controlling faculty of mindfulness, which keeps the other faculties in correct balance. Therefore, it is responsible for samadhi, it is responsible for wisdom, and it is responsible for correct effort, and it is also responsible for correct faith. We will explain more about it in the framework of the paramis, because the practice of mindfulness is naturally connected with practice of all the virtues. It is among the so-called charana bijas, the seeds of correct conduct, without which no question of developing paramis, no question of developing ability to realize. And the paramis are the conditions and the causes for the greater the paramis, the greater the realization. This is how the parami practice should be understood. The small realization is connected with small paramis, with the small virtues. The greater the realization, the greater the paramis. So, the question of practice and understanding of paramis is of crucial importance. For no matter whether we are monks or laymen, the quality of our lives and how we experience this body and the world is directly connected to our ability to develop the paramis, the virtues leading to realization. So this is first thing. By understanding, by cognizing and by practicing the paramis, we will be able to improve and perfect the controlling faculties which are responsible for the quality of our lives. The second, so says the Bodhisattva Maitreya, the second thing or second factor which will be brought to excellence by practice of the paramis is the conduct, the charitam. The one who practices paramis, he is doing nothing else but trying to practice the good or perfect or correct or beneficial conduct. Without conduct, no wisdom. Without wisdom, no conduct. The conduct and wisdom are the two necessary things to make our life worthy living. So the practice of the paramis is then the example of the practice of the correct conduct or beautiful conduct or beneficial conduct or conduct leading to happiness and to deep realization. Without paramis, the conduct will never be really good, will never be really excellent, and will never be really beneficial. No matter whether we are monks, or whether we are laymen, whether we are Buddhists, or whether we are not Buddhists, our conduct will become excellent when we have some understanding, some intuition, some experience of the paramis, of the virtues leading to realization. So, this is the second thing which the paramis perfect and make beneficial, the conduct. First controlling faculties, then the conduct. Then the third thing which is perfected and brought to excellence and which will make our life worthy of living is the upaya, the skillful means. By practicing the paramis, we will be able to attain the skillful means. The skillful means to use the good qualities that we have developed for our own benefit and for the benefit of the others. Now, according to the scriptures connected with Parami, so let us take Theravada scriptures for a change, like in Charitapitaka, which is the most widely read scripture connected with the practice of paramis in the Theravada tradition, where this practice is not explained so much in detail like in Mahayana. It is said that what makes parami a parami, it is said that when we practice virtues, controlling faculties, the correct conduct, skillful means, these virtues become virtues when they are, it is said, not ataya, not for the sake of oneself, but loka ataya, for the sake of the the world for the sake of the whole. So that means when one practices the paramis, one does not consider oneself to be the object of the paramis, object of the practice of the virtues. One considers the whole. Of course, the self is included in the whole. Whatever one does with the firm conviction and deep understanding that the oneself and the whole is inseparable. The one does all the good conducts and all the good virtues for the benefit of the world. Big world, not the small self. Then the virtues will be entitled to be called paramis. If they are virtues of practice with the perspective of getting something for oneself, of getting benefit for oneself, or getting benefit just for one's family members, then they, so Charitapitaka, then they are, these virtues are not entitled to be called real paramis. The virtues are entitled to be called paramis only when they are done with the perspective of benefiting the whole. That means, what does it mean? That means they have to be done without attachment. They have to be done with pure heart. They have to be done in accordance with the Dharma. Not in accordance with one's own ideas, but in accordance with the Dharma. Then these virtues will be called a paramis. And then these virtues, then the fourth aspect of the practice of the paramis, they will bring the Mahaphala, the great fruit. So that means the paramis, they have two aspects. The first aspect is they are the virtues which lead to realization. They are the virtues which lead from this shore connected with suffering of the impermanence of the samsaric existence to the other shore, the shore of nirvana. This is first aspect. The second aspect is they are to be virtues which are done for the benefit of the whole, not for the benefit of oneself. That means they are to be done with the perspective of not of holding, but of renouncing. If the virtues are, if the good conduct is done with the perspective of holding, then It will not be paramis in the sense as it is understood in the literature. It will become paramis only when it is done with the perspective of renunciation, of giving up oneself for the sake of the whole. Only then they will be able to bring this Mahaphala, the great fruit. Then the great fruit of what? The great fruit of realization. In Buddhist traditions, we have three kinds of realization. The power of all this realization is dependent directly on the power of the paramis. Therefore, those who aspire, who have the abhinihara, who have the aspiration, the will, the conduct, the desire for the realization of the disciples, they will, as disciples, they will become great disciples in virtue of their great paramis. They will become supreme disciples in virtue of the power of the supreme paramis of the disciples. So that means no matter what kind of realization we aspire for, what kind of realization we have abhinihara, we have aspiration for, we have conduct for, the power of that realization will be dependent on the power of the paramis. That is why it is so important also to learn meditation with the perspective of the meditation parami or wisdom parami. Then the second realization, the realization of the Buddhas for themselves, which is in a way supreme to the realization of the disciples, is also directly linked to the more excellent paramis of these individuals. And of course, the highest possible perfection, the highest possible parami, belong to the fully enlightened, supremely enlightened Buddhas. They require the most perfect and the longest practice of the paramis, of the virtues leading to the other shore. So these are of course, in the Buddhist tradition, those who are studying Mahayana, they know that some, like Saddharma Pundarika, the Lotus Sutra and so on, speak of only one supreme reality, reality of the Buddha, and all the other paths is just the skillful means to leading to this supreme condition of the Buddha, which is the ultimate and the but we will leave aside this idea, because for us the most important is understanding of the paramis. And the paramis, no matter what practice we do, will decide the quality of our realization. And not only quality of our realization, also the what is most important for us, and what we will especially emphasize, it will decide the quality of our lives. This, because as we will keep on pointing out, this practice of paramis, its job is to improve the quality of our lives by learning the ability to do beneficial things for the whole, forgetting the self. Forgetting the self means finding the self in the whole. This is precisely what is the parami practice concerned with. So I hope that we have made clear in one way or another how important it is to understand the paramis and to practice the paramis. I wanted to start before we discuss further the paramis, I wanted to start with the method, which is very important. And before I start with the method, I want to ask all the participants who are here, if there is anyone who has not practiced meditation before, please raise your hand. Only one. You have practiced meditation before? No, I mean in general meditation. Because if not practice meditation, then we will have to explain some basic principles of meditation. What is the condition of meditation and so on. So, as we have explained, we will start in an unusual way. We will start with meditation. And meditation as parami. As a topic of meditation, I will leave it to you what topic you will practice here, but usually we recommend the meditation on breath, and that is also the meditation we will refer to mostly in our explanation of the practice of samadhi as parami. So before we explain the method, I will explain briefly what is the advantage of the Anapanasati meditation. So what is Anapanasati? Anapana means in-breath and out-breath, and sati means mindfulness or memory or remembering. That means if we practice Anapanasati, we have to remember or be mindful or recollect to our mind continually the process of in-breath and out-breath. If you do it, you are practicing mindfulness of breath. If you don't do it, then you are not practicing mindfulness of breath. It is very important to understand. So it is called mindfulness and of breath because when you practice it, you are concerned with in-breath and out-breath. And whatever you are experiencing, all the feelings, all the cognitions, all the thoughts. You are experiencing with the full awareness of in-breath and out-breath. If you don't do it, you are not practicing mindfulness of in-breath and out-breath. Please see this very clearly. We will explain then why is it so important. So, sati or smrti, what does it mean? This is, as all those who have studied Buddhism know, this smrti or sati or nyen or is the key concept of the whole Buddhist practice. There is no Buddhist practice without the practice of sati or smrti. Why is that? We have to understand very clearly. What does this faculty, as it is called, the faculty of smrti, the faculty of mindfulness, what does it do? What does it do? It brings, when you are practicing the meditation, it brings the meditation object to the mind in such a way that it becomes a clear object, that the mind does not float away, does not leave that object. That's what sati does to the mind in meditation. So that means when you're meditating on breath, you are always remembering the breath as a clear object. And do not let the mind to float away from this clear object. So, for a meditator, the meditator meditating, the object of meditation has to be always clear object. And the job of the meditator is never allow that other object than the object of meditation becomes more clear. This is what the sati does. And the object of meditation is that object which the meditator has to regard highly. This is very important to understand. One is meditating, so explained in the scriptures, in the way that one regards the meditation object highly. Only when one regards the meditation object highly, one will be able to keep it in the mind as a direct, as a clear object. So it is explained in the scriptures, samstute vastuni asam pramosha. One does not, as Abhidharma Kosha says, the students of Buddhism usually study Abhidharma Kosha, that object, the job of the sati is that object which is object of meditation, one regards highly, and when one regards it highly, one does not forget it. If one forgets it, one does not regard it highly. So please remember, when you watch the breath, you will only remember it as a clear object when you regard it highly. And what is the cause for sati, the cause for sati is the stable perception of the object. What you regard highly, you have stable perception of that. If you don't have stable perception of that, then it means you are not regarding it highly. So it is very important to understand. So, very simply, when one does meditation on breath, one tries one's best to keep always the mindfulness and the awareness connected with the process of in-breath and out-breath. Now, where does one remember the breath? Where one is aware of the breath? Best place for that is around the nostrils. Is it clear? Some of us may have meditated on the rising and falling of the abdomen and so on. You should be aware, as explained in the scriptures, that when we are breathing in and breathing out, the whole body, each pore of our skin, as explained in Abhidharma Kosha, also Yogacara Bhumi Shastra, is participating in the process of breathing in and breathing out. When you have attained a very sharp concentration, you will be able even to see the individual pores of the skin and the subtle image of the breath may even appear on such a subtle place like a pore of the skin. But this is a very difficult job. So the easiest way to be aware of breath as a clear object is to place your awareness and your mindfulness around the nostrils. For those who have a sharp nose, it will become most clear on the top of the nose. For those who have a more flat nose, it may become more clear on the upper lip. Wherever you see around the nostrils the process of in-breath and out-breath most clearly, there the mind should be placed. This is the first step. Now, in order to place the mind effectively on the meditation object, and the meditation object is called in Buddhism karma sthana. The karma here means effort, sthana means a place. In order to place effectively the mind on the meditation object, one has to understand why one is doing that. That is also very important. We will explain more about it when we talk about the samadhi as parami. But anyone who wants to meditate effectively has to understand that he is placing his mind on the meditation object in order to prevent the mind from wandering. What mind wanders? The mind which is controlled by eye faculty, by hearing faculty, by nose faculty, by tongue faculty, by bodily faculty, that is the mind which is always inclined to wander. That is why the eye consciousness, ear consciousness and so on, these five consciousnesses connected to the body, they have no ability to develop deep concentration and wisdom. The ability to develop deep concentration and wisdom belongs to the mental faculty, not to the eye faculty, not to the ear faculty, and so on. So, for that reason, the condition for the meditation, condition for placing mind on the meditation object effectively is to avoid mind wandering from colors to sounds to smells and so on, but to keep the mind inside the body. If you keep the mind inside the body, you will be able to go into meditation. If you follow the outer impressions, the impression of the five senses, you will not be able to go into meditation. So the condition for going into meditation is called the kaya viveka, the isolation of the body. Isolation of the body from the visual impressions, from the sound impressions and so on. And turning the mind inside, not letting it wander outside. What is the condition of the wandering mind, of the mind which wanders outside? The scriptures explain the mind which is not concentrated, which is not kept outside, it is a mind, as Abhidharma Kosha explains and so on, it is a mind when the sound becomes prominent, it runs to the sound. When the color becomes prominent, it runs to the color. When the taste becomes prominent, it runs to the taste. When the bodily sensation becomes prominent, it runs to the body. This is the condition of the unstable mind. Mind not in meditation. Now, what is the condition of the mind in meditation? It does not follow the outer impressions. It turns on itself. By watching the in-breath and out-breath, the mind then turns on itself. Now, what is the condition for our ability to develop this capacity to ignore the outer impressions and let the mind turn on itself? Stable bodily postures. Stable bodily posture, the scriptures explain. That is why we have in our program also integrated some yoga exercises, which are meant for stabilizing the bodily posture. And we will talk a little bit more about it in the framework of our yoga lessons. According to the yoga philosophy and the Buddhism, in a way, is also nothing else but the yoga philosophy. When the bodily posture is stable, the sensations, the cognitions, as Visuddhimagga explains, as the path of purification explains, will be different. When the bodily posture is not stable, the feelings, the cognitions, the perceptions will again have very different quality. Please kindly pay attention to this and see it very clearly, how the feelings, perceptions and cognitions become different when the bodily posture is stable, how the feelings, perceptions and cognitions again have different quality when the bodily posture is not stable. Also, the breathing, we will also pay attention to it a little bit in our yoga lessons, and I hope you pay attention to it in the meditation also. The quality of breathing will also become very different when the bodily posture is stable, and it will become different when there is no stability in the bodily posture. So the condition for developing ability of the mind to turn on itself, to turn to the meditation object and to get clear mindfulness and awareness of the meditation object and continuity in it, which is a key to meditation. We should also pay attention to the stable bodily posture, which is supporting ability of the mind to stay firm on the meditation object. Then the second condition for succeeding in meditation, succeeding in absorbing oneself in the breath to the extent of finally making the breath so subtle that it becomes not noticeable anymore, is the isolation of the mind. That means the isolation from the mind, from all other ideas, all other perceptions, all other feelings, all other cognitions, except the feeling, cognition, thought, perception of the meditation object. When one can attain it, when one can achieve it, one will be able to achieve meditation. when one has achieved meditation, when one has achieved perfection in meditation, what we will continue to talk about in the coming days, how to achieve it, what are the steps in this achievement. Then, if one applies the mind to wisdom, whatever wisdom meditation one will use, will the objects of wisdom will be cognized in full clarity. The condition for that is meditation, and the cognition and the condition for meditation is the isolation of the body and the isolation of the mind. And how to do it in regard to the breath, we will continue discuss tomorrow morning after taking the precepts. So that much for today, because some of us have come from a far place, they might be tired. So we will, as usual, transfer merit for the benefit of the sentient beings, which is also one of the basic practices of the paramis. Whatever one does with the perspective of the paramis, one should do it with the perspective of transferring merit for the benefit of all beings without exception. So I will do it now in Pali.
Akasatta jagumattha deva naga maitika punyantam anumoditva chiramakantu lokasasanam. Akasatta jagumattha deva naga maitika punyantam anumoditva chiramakantu desanam. Akasatta jagumattha deva naga maitika punyantam anumoditva chiramakantu tumamparam. Sabitiyo vivajantu sabarugo vinasatu mate bhavatvantarayo sukhi dikhayuko bhava bhavatu sabamangalam rakhantu sabadevata sababudhanubhave sabadhammanubhave sabasanganubhave sada suktiye bhavantu te devo vasatu kale sasa sampati hetu cha pito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko.
So let us take rest, especially those who have come from a far place, and tomorrow we will start with full energy into 1 month surrounding meditation. Okay.